You still there?
Blog Talk Radio.
Got things a little mixed up there. I'm not sure what happened to the music, but that's okay. Hey, welcome to Arming Champions Radio. I'm Alan Fisher. My wife is normally the one that actually does this show, and she's out there getting some really good schooling in for her life coaching. And I have on the phone with me Charlie Marino. Hey, Charlie, you there?
I am. Hey, Alan.
Awesome. Great to have you on the show. I'm real excited. Been doing a lot of looking into who you are and what you're all about. And, you know, Carolyn titled this show, A Man That Gives Back. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to get into that one because I don't even know how you do it. You're a law enforcement trainer, a high school coach. You've made a huge impact in communities. You help regulate professional and amateur boxing, kickboxing, martial arts. You've been on TV as on pay-per-view, showbox. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. You also helped create and develop schools outreach programs for, it says over 50 students, but having been in that facility with you, I think there's a lot more than 50. Yeah, you're really quite accomplished there, Charlie. The beautiful thing about you is you don't hold it all in. You don't keep it to yourself. It's not about you. It's so much about others. And
thank you.
I want to just
I appreciate that, really. I mean, that's, you know, when you said it, it kind of didn't really sound like it was me, honestly. I mean, it kind of felt like you were talking about somebody else because I don't ever think about it as like, wow, I guess I do a lot.
You do. And
yeah,
you're even, like I said to you, you're even married.
Well, that was one of your first questions. It was kind of funny, you know. I mean, you asked me when we met, you were just asking me to tell you what I did, you know, by way of activities, and I told you the activities, and, you know, I just remember your eyes going, wait, and you're still married? You're married? I'm like, yeah. You know, and it's not until you hear it come out, and then you start going, gosh, I guess we are really busy.
Yeah, you know, and it sounds to me like you have a loving and understanding wife for all the things that you do. You're just out there serving and giving back, and that's what Arming Champions Radio is all about, to find people like you that have dedicated their lives not just to what they do and their own accomplishments, but others and how they can help others. So the first thing, Charlie, is that, you know, I had the opportunity to go to the Shindo Dojo and the activity center there at Faith Chapel, who I must say I'm really amazed at that. You've got this humongous room full of people, and that was only one class over there at Faith Chapel here in San Diego. And they've been allowing you to actually do this training there, martial arts, pretty much for, what, 20 years?
Yeah, this is it's hard to believe, Alan, that, yeah, it's going on our 20th year. I just, you know, in talking to you about that, sometimes, I mean, the time literally has flown by, and I look back and I go, gosh, I can't believe I've been here doing this for 20 years. It's hard to believe.
Amazing. And you actually allow people to come in there and learn this art, karate, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce this other one. What is it? Freestyle karate, Kosho Ryo?
Kosho-ryu Kenpo, yeah. So our the curriculum that I teach is the art that I obtained my black belt in, and that's American Freestyle, and under my instructor, Sensei Mark Burnham. And he discovered in his kind of his quest, you know, for trying to, as most martial artists do, they kind of search, they do a lot of, you know, family tree crawling around, and he discovered that the art that he had been entrusted to teach and pass on was actually an art that was essentially, you know, brother to Koshoryu Kenpo. So they had it was part of the same family tree. And the way you typically find that out is through your forms, you know, which are called katas, but for all intents and purposes, it's forms. It's a, you know, choreographed set of moves. And you kind of find out where somebody learned something through those movements, because there was one guy at the very beginning who taught those movements, and he passed them on, and you would know based upon where he was at and you know, geographically, and when he was, because they're stories, you know, they're choreographed moves that are martial arts. It's fighting, but they're really stories, and based upon the storytelling, you know, you kind of get a flavor of where the person comes from. So in his quest to kind of find out, hey, you know, I'm doing these things and other people are telling me that this is similar to this, or I'm discovering that I just met this guy and, you know, what I do is very similar to him. He found that our art was essentially a brother art to Koshoryu Kenpo. So, but the curriculum, again, the curriculum that I teach is American freestyle, which is traditional Japanese Okinawan martial arts with a mixture of American boxing and wrestling.
Reminds me a lot of the Karate Kid, you know, wax on, wax off. Sometimes people don't know why they do the things they do until later, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that, you know, I use that movie all the time because as much as people have through the years made fun of it, there are a ton of great karate principles that are in that movie.
And you probably recognized all of them, and we only got a few.
I'm still searching, you know. I'm as I tell my students, you know, my upper belts, I say, you know what, every once in a while a donkey can speak, you know, that's kind of me. I'm just muddling around life trying, you know, fat, dumb, and happy, and every once in a while I can throw out a nugget, you know.
Exactly. Tell me something, you know, there are so many martial arts companies out there and people that do what you do. What is it that you would say would set you aside from everybody else, especially here in San Diego?
Well, the main thing, really, and it's what allows us to, and you hit on it earlier, what allows us to operate in a church. The martial arts, as pretty much everybody knows, you know, is very Eastern philosophy driven. So with that comes the lack of Christianity. You know, in Japan, they have millions of gods, you know, and the Chinese, they pray to several different gods. Well, that doesn't fit too well in the church. So when our at the time, almost, you know, 20 years ago, associate pastor had been brought to the church from Seattle. He was training in a very traditional Japanese martial art up in Seattle. And the head pastor and I were friends because he was my college pastor. And the associate pastor was his best friend, and he knew that there was a connection, and martial arts was the bridge to the connection between the associate pastor, whose name is Dennis, and myself. So he kind of put us together, and through that relationship, Dennis said, hey, let's get something started here at the church. And it had been my, you know, I'd been kind of asking, you know, God, why I had been training all these years. You know, what's the purpose of me doing this karate that at times was the bane of my wife's relationship with me, because I'd be training until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, you know, and so it there was a little bit of friction that was caused. And I know I'm giving you a long story.
No, that's good. Actually, I need to hear this because I'm going through a little bit of this with my own career as an arm wrestler and with my wife. So go ahead.
So thank you. And so, you know, in my conversations with the Lord, I had been asking him, hey, why am I doing this? You know, to what to what end am I doing? I mean, I love it. I've always loved it ever since I was a little kid. You know, I grew up in the old Kung Fu movie times. You know, Bruce Lee was hot on the circuit, and as a little kid, you know, everything was Bruce Lee. So I loved the martial arts, you know, from way back when. And but here I was practicing it for years and years and years and years. And yeah, it keeps you in shape, and yes, it has a lot of other principles that obviously benefit your life in the physical sense. But you know, as a Christian, which I am, you kind of try to temper, just like the Bible says, hey, you know, physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things. And you kind of try to temper what it is you're doing to make sure that you're not doing the physical so more than the other part, you know? So here I was kind of wrestling with that question, asking the Lord, hey, why am I doing this? And he said, I want you to give back, number one. You know, I've blessed you with a talent, and I want you to give it back to other people, but I want you to share with people about me through relationship, you know? And it was through that whole thing, and that's what really makes us different, is that we're a school that is all about Jesus Christ, you know, and leading people to Christ through relationship. And really, that's, you know, that's kind of what Christ came here to do. God, it was pretty important, I thought, you know, and God was kind of illustrating to me that it was pretty important to have fellowship and relationship with others. I mean, that was the main the main purpose for us even being created, you know, was so that we could have relationship with Him and fellowship with Him. So I thought, well, this must be a pretty important thing to Him, so I better listen, you know. So with the help of my friend Dennis, who's now one of my black belts, we started this program at the church, and I got to say, we went through some hurdles, because in the beginning, people hear karate and they think Eastern philosophy. So we spent quite a bit of time making sure that all the mysticism, you know, was taken out. That we didn't, you know, we explained things with just natural body movement and that sort of thing. And and I know, you know, that's kind of a long way around to tell you that what sets us apart is that we're a Christian faith-based karate school. And it is interwoven in every part of what we do in our ranks and in the things that we teach. It's a ministry first, it's karate second, and that's what really sets us apart. And going back to the other thing with, you know, that I was mentioning about my wife and that kind of being a little bit of a struggle. Yeah, it was for years, and I think really, you know, when God's in something, your partner, at some point, you don't have to nudge them. The Holy Spirit does, you know. And I was grateful, because there was that friction. I was wanting to keep moving forward and doing this thing. And trust me, there were times where I was saying, okay, I don't know if this is worth it, God. I mean, I'm getting a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of friction. And I know that my first ministry is here in the home. It's to my wife and my kids, you know. And this other thing's causing a lot of friction.
Sure.
So, you know, there was a lot of conversation back and forth saying, hey, I really need, if this is from you, I really need you to sway my partner to have the light come on and say, okay, I'm behind you on this. And if it isn't, then, you know, let's close the door down, because I don't want to waste any more time. And all that while, you know, the school is growing and more people are coming. This was the thing, and you probably already have this in your relationship, but this was the thing. My wife is very athletic. She loves to work out. If there's a sport to play, she'll play it. But she had never done karate. She essentially really didn't have any use for it. And one day, she came into karate, and she saw what I was doing, and we were doing a lot of calisthenic cardio stuff. And she said, you know what, I'm gonna come into the class. I got to tell you, I was floored. She said, I'm going to come to the class because it looked like you were doing some cardio stuff. Are you going to be doing that for a little while? And I, you know, the question or the answer to the question was, yeah, I'm doing it for a while. How long are you coming, you know? So right away I wanted to answer that question and make sure that I was going to be doing whatever it was I was doing at the time for a little while to get her in. And you know, she said, you know, it looks like it's a pretty good workout. So that was really the thing. I knew God right then. I knew God had spoken to her and put that little plug, made me do the class the way I did it on the day that she came in. And then she started training. And then there was this buy-in on the physical side. And then it was a beautiful illustration. I got to tell you, it was a great illustration. And God said, see, that's why you're doing this. There's people that are going to come through the door, that, and all they want to do is karate. But yet, you're going to be able to share the love of Christ to them through relationship. But all they're going to do is they're going to come in and they're going to see karate. They're going to see, because what we do is free. We don't charge anything to anyone.
That's amazing.
I've been blessed to be given a facility that they don't charge me to do it. You know, I just, you know, give of my time, and, you know, really that's, it doesn't seem
and
like
And you've been big. Doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but I figure, well, you know, I want to train anyway, so why not go and, you know, if I can teach some people, we'll teach some people. But it was more about God saying, hey, see that? There's going to be people that are going to come here, and they're going to ask you how much. You're going to tell them zero. They're going to go, hey, you know, this is a kind of a neat little thing, you know, that you're doing. You're teaching people. I'm learning karate. And then through that, they can walk through the karate doors, and then they can walk right across and go to church. And it was like, okay, I get it. You know, I get it. That's why I've been doing this all this time, is to get people to come in, learn something that has really nothing to do with the gospel, but it has everything to do about relationship.
And those
Christ,
are all important, yes. You actually mentioned that your dojo actually focuses on self-discipline, self-defense, character development, respect, obedience, and honor. And pretty much you handed me a piece of paper here called Character Traits Requirements, and you actually do, 22 different character traits that you make up. You consider this be the right stuff. So if you can just hang on a second, we're just going to visit our sponsor real quick. And
sure.
I'll get right back to you regarding that. So there's a war going on out there over the nutritional health of our children. Every day we're fighting convenient foods, fast foods, television advertising, and our own busy schedules. It's a war many of us, we feel that we're losing, especially when we learn that 40 million children in America have high cholesterol levels, or 70% will develop the beginning stages of hardening of the arteries by the time they're 12. All because their parents aren't paying enough attention to what they feed their children. But there's ongoing research with the Juice Plus Children's Health Study that's dedicated to improving the state of children's health nutrition around the world. You can take a look at this, find out more about the health study at energynutrition.net. So getting back to these character traits, I found these to be quite interesting. Every belt that actually you give, and I forget how many there actually are. Do you know how many belts there are? I'm sure offhand. But every belt, you actually have something interesting about these things we just spoke about, these character traits. And, you know, obviously people are benefiting from this as they go through this amount of discipline. This character building, which, you know, is really fueling the right stuff. For 20 years, you've been actually helping people in the community, not just adults, but even youths themselves, to learn these skills that you've been giving. And also, there's many others that actually along with you that have actually grown through your expertise, through your learning, through your instruction, and have become very skilled in this, where they're actually helping others that are coming along. I think you said you had a couple of them that are with you, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I do. And you know, when you're saying that, when you're talking about it right now, it just really excites me. I guess it renews my passion for what I'm doing. To hear you talk about it and essentially paint the picture, you know, that I walk in every week, you know, but for you to paint it for me so that I can stand back and see it helps me really appreciate what it is and have kind of a renewed sense of eagerness to really do what it is that God's called me to do with this ministry. So I appreciate you doing that right now because it just really ministers to me to me just now, you know, you saying that.
You don't, Charlie, I have to say, I mean, you deserve all the accolades, the credits, the praise, and the shout-outs for this, seriously. But, you know, when something becomes common, we become kind of numb to it sometimes. Like, for instance, when I walked in that room, and I saw, I don't know how many people there, this is a massive, massive room. I'd say there's got to be over 100 people in that room. Just some word of advice. Next time you go in there and you see all those people that are there because of the work that God has put you into, look at that as being that praise that you can actually take in and say, thank you for giving me this opportunity, because you set out to do something, you did it, I don't know how many classes you actually run or how many times a week. On average, I'm just curious, per week, how many people do you actually coach, train? And we didn't even talk about the wrestling thing. We're only talking about the dojo here. But how many people do you feel that you're actually in ministry with throughout the week?
Well, I can tell you that our classes run Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those are really the only days that the church can give me. If we had another day, I would probably have another day there. And we have three classes a night, and the classes run about an hour a session. Our first class, as you mentioned, is usually our largest class, and I've underestimated the numbers, you know, just for kind of doing averages, but I usually say that class runs somewhere between 60 and 80, and you're right, there was probably more than that the night you came in. So I don't know, maybe on a weekly basis there's a couple hundred, 300 people maybe.
Wow.
Or you know, maybe, yeah, that's probably a conservative, you know, number.
That's pretty huge. I mean, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, you know, so I was doing the math the other day, and I want to say that I had in the time period that we've been there, classes have varied in hours, you know, throughout the years, but I want to say it was in excess of like 10,000 hours, I think.
Wow.
Maybe even more. It was, you know, quite a few hours. It was staggering when I just kind of did the math. And as you mentioned, I got in law enforcement for a reason. I don't do math very well, so not a whole lot of math to do in law enforcement.
Well, you know, it's another thing you mentioned in your bio to us, that, you know, obviously you're in extensive law enforcement, and you've been with that for how long?
I've been doing that. This is going on my 21st year.
Wow, 21 years. But it doesn't stop there. Again, it's like because you've got this background with law and now the martial arts, you also teach something that I think is extremely necessary for women. You teach a self-defense course from time to time for them. And there's a lot of women that are actually needing this in a huge way today. So now people need to get in touch with you regarding this, because whenever I go to some martial arts facility, I'm constantly seeing a huge group of women in there learning self-defense courses.
Yeah, our school, I would say, is somewhat of an anomaly. A lot of women do go to martial arts schools, and that's kind of grown in recent years that more women have come out and started, you know, taking the martial arts. When I was first taking the martial arts, there were very few women that stuck through it all the way to black belt. You know, usually it was the kids, but, you know, as life happens with men and women, it just seemed like, you know, the guys were the ones that were in the class longest, and, you know, women were getting busy doing whatever they needed to do in life, and they kind of fell out. So, but I've recently kind of seen it where it's you know, they're coming back. And our group, there was been years where the women outnumbered the men in classes very steadily, you know, and I want to say even now it's still pretty 50-50 in our school. And you know, when I say women, I'm talking adult women from, you know, the ages of 20 to, I think our oldest adult female is 70. I think she's 70 or no. Yeah, I think she is. She's either 69 or 70, right in there. So, you know, we have a pretty good cross section of ages, and we do, I do and have in the past, have done some women's self-defense courses. I have, through my law enforcement networking, I have, a partner that adds another component to it because of what he does, that's very specialized. So we give some very raw, down and dirty information that most people wouldn't be able to see or experience, and we make it very, very impactful for them. When they leave, they go, man, I never really looked at my surroundings or my life, you know. We expose them to that other side of life. You know, most of the time there's two parallel lives, you know, passing each other. And, you know, you've got that criminal element, and that life, you know, runs parallel to the Christian and the wholesome life. And every once in a while, those two roads intersect, you know, and you kind of want to try to limit those intersections as much as possible. But sometimes there's a collision, and, you know, that's what you're preparing people for. So there's women's self-defense and law enforcement training is very, very similar. So it's easy for me to teach it because the concepts are very similar. You know, women just naturally are more in tune with things, you know, that mom sense, that little voice that they hear more often than men do. You know, I mentioned it earlier. Most of the time I walk around fat, dumb, and happy. And I think most guys are that way, but women, God just made them that way, nurturing and more, I think, in tune with their emotions. So because of that, they have an ability to sense things far more easily than men do. So, and in law enforcement, you kind of have to build that. You know, women already have it naturally. You know, in law enforcement, I had to learn those things, put certain steps in place to be able to learn those tactics. So that's why I say teaching women self-defense almost comes naturally because of what I do professionally. So it makes it easy. You know, it makes it easy. And then, you know, obviously the women are there to learn. They want to get busy. So that part makes it easy too.
Yeah, I think that's great. Now, along with you know, your school, you actually have done something. Boy, you talk about giving back. I did some research on this too. I'm going to mention this name, and I'd like you to just say a little bit about this. The Royal Family Kids. You were involved in a youth karate tournament fundraiser. You were seeking to get, $10,000, and you made over $8,000 for this group. What was it that actually tied you in with the Royal Family Kids?
Well, that's a program that our church, Faith Chapel, which I am a member of, has supported for years, and the directors of that ministry through our church knew that, you know, that I was doing karate, and they had asked if, you know, and it was kind of it's kind of, let me back up a little bit, because one of my students that came to Faith Chapel, her and her family, she has been a foster mother in San Diego County for, I want to say, 20 years. She was like the foster mom of the year. Just recently, her name is Patty Bertram, and her husband, Pat, they've been foster parents for years and years and years. And the types of children that they would bring into their home were kids that have been severely abused. I want to say, you know, things that just would make your skin crawl, you know, these poor guys that and gals that they would get. So those kids were the types of kids that Royal Family Kids was ministering to. So with that kind of that partnership that I was already having as a student, and she was bringing kids to me all the time, it just really lent itself to our school doing something for Royal Family Kids. And what we ended up doing was we sponsored a kids invitational tournament, and all the proceeds that came through the tournament, you know, registration and all that, donations, all of that went to Royal Family Kids camp. So there's a camp that they would, the directors would, and other churches as well. There are a lot of churches nationwide, and I think they're in at least two other countries, if not more than that, participate in Royal Family Kids and Royal Family Kids camps. Well, there's a specific camp that our church would send volunteers to and sponsor kids to go to. So we knew that was something that they were raising funds to help send as many kids as possible. And really the camp was about, you know, we and you said it earlier, common things we tend to just kind of get complacent about. Well, when you would see these kids that would come in, and I was seeing them firsthand in my karate school, and they were grateful to have people be nice to them. You know, I mean, that was something they were grateful to have, that somebody wasn't beating them or hurting them on a regular basis. That's the type of kids that were going through Royal Family Kids Camp, that every single day of their life, they're being treated horrifically, you know, locked in closets. So it was one of those things that, gosh, yeah, we need to do something to help, you know, get as many kids to this camp as possible. So we just set out. My wife was a huge component of that, because she's an organizer. She likes to plan events, and she gives back tremendously. And so she would, you know, take the ball and run with it. And I really had the easy job. You know, I had the easy job of being out there and, you know, waving high, greeting, you know, and greeting folks. And, you know, I really had the easy job. My wife had the hard part. And so we ran four tournaments. They were kids invitationals, and we did it, you know, to raise funds so that more kids would be able to go to camp, and send extra resources, you know, to the church, so that they could, you know, try to get one more.
Well, that's terrific. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know about the Royal Family Kids, and what they're all about. It's the nation's leading network of camps and mentor clubs for children of abuse, abandonment, and neglect, as you just mentioned. And I should give their website, because I think it's real important. It's royalfamilykids.org. You can find out all about it. It's not just here in San Diego either. This is what, throughout the United States, I guess, right?
Yeah, it is. And I know they have Royal Family Kids in Australia even.
They did have an international program too. So
yeah,
this is a huge group that everyone really should look at and help this situation. I'm grateful for you for what you've done through that, and in your dojo, your students, your teachers, and everything. So that's awesome. If I can, I'm just going to take another break here and just let everyone know about our sponsors. If I can do it just a second. So You're going to find this kind of interesting yourself, my friend, because you see it every day, and that is that everyone wants to eat right, maintain a healthier lifestyle. Whether you're a busy mom or hustling to feed the ongoing children, busy traveler trying to stay fit, or active boomer keeping up with the grandkids, it's difficult. You know, unfortunately, it's really hard to maintain a balanced nutritional diet. Most of us suffer from daily fruit and vegetable consumption gaps as a result, so therefore not getting the rich vitamins, antioxidants. Well, Juice Plus can help you fill those holes in your diet. Juice Plus is a whole food-based nutrition, including juice powder concentrates from 30 different fruits, vegetables, and grains. Juice Plus helps bridge the gaps between what you should eat and what you do eat every day. It's not a multivitamin, medicine, or treatment, or cure for any disease. Juice Plus is made from quality ingredients carefully monitored from farm to capsule to provide natural ingredients that your body needs. You can check that out at energynutrition.net. Let's get back to our guest. You know, I mentioned after meeting you, and we joked about this in the beginning of the show, you know, whether you were married or not. And, you know, you told me that your wife is involved in a group that I think people should be aware of personally. You know, and I don't, you can tell me if this is just San Diego, but I really wanted to talk about it because she works with a group called Friends of Caps, I believe. Is that how you pronounce it? Friendsofcaps.org is the actual website. And that organization is quite interesting. You might say it's a, I don't want to say a competitor, but they're like a Planned Parenthood in a sense. And you know, when somebody is, I kind of wish you would have had your wife on this call to tell you the truth, because this is not what I normally speak about, but it's a serious issue in everywhere in the world about having children out of wedlock. There's a lot of things when obviously a gal gets pregnant and, you know, the guy runs off, you know, they're not going to commit to marriage. There's a lot of questions that go on, and you know, checking out the website, there's, you know, the choices are quite interesting. I don't know from you, like I said, I wish we would have had your wife, but we don't. We've got you, so you have to answer the question. I'm sure you've heard it from your wife anyway. I'm just curious, in your opinion, what is the difference between Planned Parenthood, right, and the Friends of Caps?
Well, there's a big difference. You know, I'll just have to be very blunt on the subject, and hopefully my wife won't get upset, but Planned Parenthood really, it's kind of an oxymoron. It really isn't Planned Parenthood. It's very bluntly, it's about abortion. You know, that is the plan that they're presenting to the parent. CAPS doesn't do that. CAPS is a pregnancy care center that is faith-based. Their whole goal is to help young women who find themselves in unwanted or unplanned pregnancies to carry to full term and either keep the child or offer that child to some families that would adopt. And that is the main difference. You know, Planned Parenthood, I always chuckle when I hear that name because there's no planning about it. They're not trying to help you plan any sort of parenthood. They're really trying to take that parenthood away from you. And CAPS, College Area Pregnancy Services, that's what it stands for, because it's based in the college area here in San Diego, specifically in and around San Diego State. CAPS is very much a faith-based pregnancy care center that is wanting to love on young women that find themselves in a hard place and really try to through relationship, present the gospel to them, give them, you know, pregnancy care services, and you know, they have nurses there, they perform, you know, those medical processes when a young woman is pregnant. But really, what they're trying to do is turn the tide, you know, and bring some support to that young girl, so that she will carry that baby, that she won't abort the baby, and they do it through a Christian, you know, through Christian counselors. And one of the key things that I would say is probably maybe common to both centers, if there really is a commonality between the two, is that in the medical process, they both have to do sonograms. And showing the differences, CAPS, they want to show that young mom that heartbeat. They want to show them, hey, there's a life inside of you. Mm. And I would probably say that my wife would agree with me that is probably the number one reason why women choose to go full term. You know, because they're recognizing that there is a life inside of me. I heard a great phrase. I don't know where it was that I saw it or read it, but it was probably on my wife's Facebook, and it said, you know, when you're and she just walked in. So when you're, you know, when your heart stops, I'm over 40, so. Sometimes I forget a little bit. Yeah, when your heart, and I just remembered, when your heart stops, you're pronounced dead. So why is it when your heart starts, they don't pronounce you alive? You know, well, CAPS does that. They show those women that heartbeat, and they pronounce that life, you know. Planned Parenthood doesn't want to do that, because if they did that, they'd be out of business. People would walk away. Mm.
So, I wish there was a lot more facilities out there like this. This is all San Diego based.
Well, there are other facilities that I know of through my wife that are very much like CAPS. I know there's some in other states that do similar things. I know there's something, I have a friend, and we were talking about it, and there's another program that's very similar to CAPS in Northern California, Central California. So I know there are other facilities throughout the nation that are very similar to what CAPS does. You know, this just happens to be a local organization, nonprofit, that's here in San Diego. And there's also a sister organization that's East County Pregnancy Services, that does the same type of work as CAPS does. It's just in the East County area of San Diego, and where CAPS focuses in the college area.
Well, I think you represented your wife very well.
Well, hopefully she'll probably have some things. Oh, you should have said that. You should have said this. I'm sure she'll probably correct me so that I speak a little better next time.
Well, you know, no doubt, my friend, you've had really good success in what you've done and what you're going to continue to do. I mean, it's not over for you, obviously. God still has things planned for you also. But I kind of want to ask some personal things.
Sure.
Where you can give us, you know, when you're talking about your accomplishments, where do you feel you can contribute that to? I mean, is there a certain person that actually helped you get to that place? Is it something that happened in your life that made you want to really, really step out and be different?
Man, that's a really tough question. I got to say that I haven't been that introspective about my life because you just kind of painted, again, you painted that picture of the things that I do. That I just look at, I just do these things on a regular basis. It's not that big a deal, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our family, as I mentioned, we are busy on both sides. And first and foremost, I can't take any of the credit. Really, God, you know, is really the glue that holds all the fabric together in everything that I am and do. If I can give any credit anywhere, I would probably have to give it to my stock. And what I mean by that is my dad. My dad is an incredible man. He is the second oldest of 10 children. My parents are from Mexico, so my first language is Spanish. My family came here, I'm a first-generation American. My father came here in 1956 with my mother and my oldest brother, and with literally two suitcases. And they had a tough life. My dad especially had a tough life. His father died in a plane crash. He was a fisherman, my father in Mexico, but my grandfather was a fisherman, and his brothers were fishermen. And my grandfather was on his way back from a fishing trip in Baja, because the area that they lived was in Ensenada, which is about 66 miles south of San Diego in Baja, California. So my grandfather was on his way back from lower Baja California back to Ensenada, and he ended up getting on a plane to get back during Christmas time, and his plane didn't make it, and they crashed. And it was in December, and there's this one really tall peak in Baja, and it actually snows there. Well, it had been covered with snow, and they couldn't get to, by the time, you know, my father and my grandmother heard about it, they had to wait several months before they could actually, you know, get a party together to go out. And my dad, at the time, was his older brother, had left, had married, and was raising his family, and my father was still at home. So all the responsibility fell on my father's shoulders. He was 18 at the time. So he had to, and I'll try to be brief in this process, he had to go. Now, mind you, this is, I want to say it's in the late 40s, I think 1949. Not a whole lot. The first time I went to the tip of Baja, I was 7. I'm 49 now, but I was 7, and there were no roads then to the tip of Baja. They were just building the road. It took us 2 weeks to get down there. So my dad went halfway down, and there were very, very little roads, and the place that they went to had literally no road. And he had to go up this mountain. I know you're familiar with San Miguel Mountain here in San Diego. It was about the size of that mountain. They drove about halfway, and then he had to walk the rest of the way carrying this steel box, and literally had to bring his father down into this box and bring him down the mountain. And, you know, so it kind of starts with his fortitude. You know, he came here to the United States, like I said, in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked hard all his life. He still works. He's 80. He'll be 84 this year. So I really get it from him. You know, his drive, his determination, never give up. You know, you do what you got to do. You tighten your belt, and you know, you roll up your pants, and you just get in there and you keep going. You put your nose to the grindstone, and you forge on.
So great words.
I think if I had to give credit on any one person's behalf, it would be him.
Beautiful. Let me just take a quick commercial break again. Apologize for that, but sometimes it's necessary. There's a growing concern about herbicides and pesticides in our produce. We see farmers, urban farming, and in the local board movement producing huge amounts of organic produce. Well, I want to introduce you to the Tower Garden. It's a vertical aeroponic growing system. It's perfect for rooftops, patios, balconies. It's just not anywhere you can relatively has sun, but you know, you can even actually use these Tower Gardens indoors now. People are finding huge benefits of growing vertically, using 90% less water and no soil. Imagine producing more colorful, better tasting, better smelling, incredibly nutritious fruits, vegetables, and herbs. Well, these towers are getting lots of attention in the media. It's even got kids everywhere involved growing food, selling it, and providing it for people in their communities. They're getting a lot of attention in the local media. You can check out the Tower Gardens with an S.com. Back to our guest, Charlie Marino. Charlie, thank you for being so patient.
Sure.
We just have a few minutes, and I've got so many questions I really want to ask you. Let me ask you this, and if you can just keep this brief, we'll just try to get through these next few questions. What would you say is your greatest accomplishment, and why? Because you've got your hands and feet in so many things.
I think that one's a simple one for me, really. My greatest accomplishment is being a married man and being a father to two kids that love the Lord.
Wow.
So that to me is my pride and joy, really. It really is. That my both of my kids love God. They're both fantastic kids. My wife pours into those kids, and I've just got a great partner. So to me, this family unit is really my greatest, and I can't take credit for it. I really can't. Mm-hmm. But if I could say, hey, I'm proud of, this is what I'm proud of.
Well said. Okay, here's our next question. What kind of legacy do you want to leave, or like what kind of footprint?
You know, that's a question that I've pondered a lot, and it's kind of funny because it's probably more so because of my profession that I've had to think about the sobering reality of maybe something happening to me during the course of my work that I do. You know, fortunately, I've had the ability to promote, and I've moved into some positions that don't put me in harm's way as much as they used to. But the reality is still there, that could happen. So I've had to kind of, I guess I don't want to say dwell, but think about that thought a little more than I would like to in the course of my 21 years. But I the legacy that I would like to leave, if people remembered me, or spoke about me, if I had to be a fly on the wall at my own memorial service, I would want to know that people said, hey, there's a guy that loved God, loved his family, and loved people.
Oh, I love it. And along with that, my friend, comes challenges, all of what you've been doing. Like you mentioned, stuff with your wife now, even with your students, your teachers, through life, through your work. I want to ask you, and I want to leave with this question because I'd like to have an answer that can help others. And this is the reason why I ask it. What's your biggest challenge? And what do you do to actually manage that challenge?
My biggest challenge is honestly, it's getting out of my own way. Myself is really my flesh. That's my biggest challenge. And what I do to combat that really is just go back to the cross. You know, I try to stay in fellowship. I try to stay in the Bible. It's difficult. You know, we're busy. And that's where Satan tries to distract you. You know, I think sometimes you can do too much and fall away, you know, and think that you're doing things for the right reason. You know, and that's a caution. That's something that's a balance, I think, in everybody's life, you know, because I would hate for people to listen to this and say, hey, I got to get more involved. I got to get more involved and do more, you know. I that would be the wrong message that I would want to send to other people because I think sometimes you can do things for Christ, for the Lord, and really do yourself a disservice in your own personal walk. And that right there is probably the biggest challenge, just staying every day not being complacent, you know, trying to focus on that relationship with God. That's a challenge for me. It really is. You know, I got to confess, it's easy to start thinking about the things that you're doing on a daily basis and forget about God. You know, it really is. Even though God's in just about everything. I mean, he's in everything, right? And he's in everything that I'm doing. I try to make him a part of everything that I'm doing. But it's hard, and sometimes it's difficult for me. And I say this more as a way to minister to myself and remind myself that I have to stay in the Word. I have to stay in fellowship. I have to have, you know, that. And I mentioned to you earlier in text, you know, iron sharpening iron. Really, that's what this is about. You know, men encouraging other men. There's this. I think this false opinion that society has that men can't be men if they cry, if they love God, you know. You know, you're an arm wrestler. I mean, you're probably one of the manliest guys in stature that I've seen. You know, you got these big old arms, and you know. But I also see that soft, you know, godly side to you, and there needs to be more men like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for us as men to, number one, stay connected to God. Number two, recognize that, hey, it's okay if you get laughed at for the, you know, the silly things that you do, you know, and you can still be a man and love God and serve him in the little talents that you have, whatever that may be, you know. And I've been blessed with being able to do wrestling and karate, and I try to serve in there, you know, but the challenge really is myself. You know, my own self-doubts, trying not to listen to the enemy and trying to stay rooted every single day as much as I can in his word, you know, and listening to him and talking to him.
Well, you know, for us who are Christians, you know, believers, those who have their relationship with God, we are required. And in other words, our duty, but it's also our privilege. It says in Jude 21, chapter 1, there's only one chapter, verse 21, it says, keep yourselves in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ unto eternal life. So we have a responsibility every day to actually keep ourselves knowing that God is with us. You know, we've been through so much in this interview, and if I have to conclude with anything, it's this, and I think I kind of mentioned it to you when I first saw you, is that our life is like a puzzle. There are pieces that have to come together, and they only come together one way. They like perfectly fit together, as the Bible puts it. And God knows when, he knows who, he knows what, he's got the timing down. Everything is going to be. And I can say, you know, after meeting you and talking with you, it's pretty obvious to me that God has given you a beautiful picture of your life. And in that picture is just about everybody that you've actually come in contact with, that you have mentored, that you have coached, that you have trained, that you worked with. It's a beautiful picture there for you, my friend. And I really want you taking the time to be on Army Champions Radio, and I wish you the very, very best and Godspeed.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's been truly my honor and my privilege to spend this time with you.
All right, you stay in touch. Take care, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.